Expectations. Brandi Rose here, hanging out with you, and it is a beautiful Sunday afternoon. A lot of smoke in the air from the fires, but we are getting through it. This week, I have my friend, my coworker, my supervisor, actually, Donald Stage. Donald, if you want to just introduce yourself and tell us how old you are.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Donald Stage, and I'm 60 years old.
All right, Donald, where have you grown up?
Well, I was born in Missoula, Montana. That's the only big city I've ever lived in. We left there when I was 4 after my parents divorced, and we moved to a very small little place called San Carlos, Arizona, on the San Carlos Apache Reservation. And I went to school there for 5 years, kindergarten through fourth grade.
Where is San Carlos at?
It's in the sort of southern part of Arizona.
Okay. Okay, so grew up for a little time in Arizona,
yeah,
in a reservation town.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
About how many people do you think there were in that area?
Well, I'm having a hard time remembering. I think there was probably about 600 people in the little town of San Carlos. The reservation, I'm thinking around that time, had about 2,000 people, but I'm not absolutely sure about that.
Cool.
It was a small area. And it's about 30 miles outside of Globe, Arizona, which is a town that's about the size of Farmington.
Yeah, I've driven through Globe. There's a jail in Globe, right?
Right.
It's like the I think the men's prison or something.
Yeah, at Globe in Miami, there's a big mine there. There used to be anyway. I haven't been back in years, but yeah, I went kindergarten through fourth grade there. I was the only white kid in my class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So only white kid in your class. Growing up in single parent home now.
Yes, my mother and father divorced when I was 4, so I was raised by a single parent.
Yeah. So what sort of things did you experience kindergarten through fourth grade living in the Apache Reservation in Arizona?
Well, you know, I remember it as a really positive time in a lot of ways, some negative, but a lot of positive. I was always singled out as the white kid with freckles. You know, I was always the kid that looked odd in those class pictures.
You've grown out of your freckles, by the way.
Yes, yes, I have. I was definitely, obviously, the odd kid. But, you know, I was treated very well. I was never discriminated against or treated badly by anyone.
Good.
It was a good environment. I grew up in a little, there was a housing complex next to the public health hospital. My mother was a public health nurse. And so, you know, it was a pretty closed community, very small, but very closed. Everybody looked out after each other.
Yeah.
It was a good experience.
So you felt safe in this little town?
I did.
Okay. So in fourth grade, you said you only lived in Arizona for 4 years, right? Kindergarten
Correct.
Through fourth grade.
Right.
So what happens whenever you move? Where did you move to?
We moved from there to Grants, New Mexico, which, if anybody's familiar with that, is another small town, much bigger than San Carlos was, but it's a small town on the interstate between Albuquerque and Gallup. I don't even remember how many people lived there now, let alone back then. It was a real booming town back then.
Mm-hmm.
The uranium mines were going really strong, and so the population was probably triple what it is now. But it was still a small town, and I went to elementary school there. I think it was 5th, 6th, and 7th, if I remember right.
Yeah. So here's the thing that listeners have to understand, because they can't see you. You are a very, very tall man.
Yes, I am.
So so you are this kid who is just kind of moving from place to place, and so you stand out. Part of the reason, because you're the only white kid,
right,
or, you know, one of just a few white kids.
Right.
Going to these schools, but then also you're just very tall. And I don't think that that's anything that happened in the last couple of years, right? You were probably...
No, it started early.
You were probably a really tall kid. You know, whenever you lived in Arizona, you stood out for that reason. And then even whenever you lived in Grants, I think it's probably a fair statement that you just... People are drawn to you because you're so tall. That's one of the reasons. There's lots of reasons, but
I think so too. I really started developing height when I was in Grants in that time frame, middle school. You know, it was no longer the only white kid. There was, you know, it was white and Hispanic and a mix. My mother still worked for the government, for the federal government at the Job Corps Center that was there at that time. Doesn't exist any longer. And we lived on the actual center in the housing complex there. And there was a wide range of racial mixture there. A lot of blacks, a lot of Hispanic, a lot of white kids. So, it was a real diverse population.
That's a much different experience than you had.
Yeah.
So what is one memory that you have from elementary school?
Just being the dorky kid, just being the tall, dorky, didn't really fit into too many things kid, was probably the most vivid memory I have of the time. Not necessarily a bad experience, don't get me wrong, but it was, I wasn't a jock, I wasn't real intellectual, although I think people saw me as a lot smarter than I felt I was, but, I didn't really think I fit in very well in too many places with too many groups.
Yeah.
I don't remember being badly mistreated necessarily, just, different.
Did you have close friends or anything?
Not really.
Not in elementary school?
Not during that time period. I developed one close friendship with a girl in one of my classes, and we were close friends until I left that area.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of friends, no. Kind of. I think at that particular point I was realizing, even though I was quite young, I was realizing I was different. And I didn't have the intellectual capacity to understand what it was about, but I understood that I was realizing, looking back, that I was different. I wasn't interested in girls the way other boys were, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you started recognizing that
in middle school.
Between 5th and 7th grade, because that's when you lived in Grants.
Yeah, in middle school. The words I'm putting to it now, I didn't have back then to use, but in looking back, that's exactly what was going on, was that I realized, well, I just, what we would call the gay kid now.
Yeah.
I was that kid, and didn't really fit into too many areas. I think there were other kids like me. Looking back, there probably were, but, we didn't find each other. There were, it wasn't talked about back then. We're talking the early 70s. It wasn't talked about back then, and we didn't have a word for it.
Yeah.
So,
and it's Pride Month, which is very exciting. It's very exciting in this household.
in mine as well.
Yeah. Yes. Haley yesterday was like, "Hey, where's your rainbow? Why aren't you wearing any rainbow?" I was like, "Sorry, I will get on that."
me too, Haley.
Yeah. So usually, I start out an episode with, this is Donald, this is how I know him, and this is all the, this is kind of the fun stuff that we've experienced together. Now tell your story. But I really just got into your story because there's so much, whenever we were talking about whenever I said, what story do you want to tell Don?
The long time, Brandy.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot. And so, which is exciting. And that's why I really just got into it. And so we're going to get into more, just about you, your coming out story and what, all of that. But there's so much more that you experienced before that story. And so you lived in Grants until 7th grade, and then what happens?
Well, then we moved. My mother was transferred. Again, she was a public health nurse. We were transferred to a very small reservation town again called Tohatchee on the Navajo Reservation, which is about 30 minutes south of Gallup. And I went to school there for the 8th, 9th, and 10th grades.
Okay.
8th, 9th, and 10th. So junior, what would be called junior high today.
Yeah.
That area. Again, I wasn't the only white kid anymore, but it was definitely back in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was really becoming a teenager and really realizing I was different, but I couldn't really put any words to it. And then from there, we moved into Gallup, and I did high school in Gallup, 10th, 11th, and
12th. So all of these places, you're only living for, 2 to 3 years at a time.
About that, yeah.
And so what, how did that play into who you are now, just living in these places for really short periods of time?
It actually, in looking back at it, it has made me want to nest and settle and stay in one place for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, and my moving around experience wasn't even as bad as some people's. I mean, I know kids that, people my age, they went, grew up in the military families and they moved once a year. I mean, mine was nothing like that. Mm-hmm. There was at least a minimum of 2 years in every place. But it definitely, I definitely have a nesting urge to park myself in one place, make my home and not go somewhere.
Yeah.
I've lived in Farmington now for 34 years.
Which is 33 significant.
And a half. 34 and a half years.
Yeah.
And doing various things. But I, you know, people ask me when I retired from my first job, what was I wanting to do? And I didn't have any real desire to move.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely never wanted to move back to a bigger city. So I've stayed and done things here. I've been in my house for 12 and a half years. You know, I tend to stay. And I think that's a result of moving around quite a bit as a kid.
Yeah. So I want to hear more about you living in high school. What are some of the experiences of being in Gallup, of growing up, you know, moving around a lot, not having a lot of close friends, and now you're in high school, which is a very, it's a very special time, I think, in any person's life, their years in high school. And so I would love to hear just more about something, you know, significant about those, you know, 2.5-3 years that you were in high school, because I think that there's a lot of development that happens there. And you're Absolutely. Living in Gallup, yeah. which for anybody, Gallup isn't big.
No.
You know, Gallup is probably as big as Farmington, I would say.
I don't even think it's as big as Farmington.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's sizable, but it's not the I think it's even smaller than Farmington, if I remember correctly. The high school years were painful. They were very painful. I think, you know, I didn't have the words. I didn't have anybody to talk to back then, so I didn't, you know, come out and acknowledge I was gay. In fact, I didn't do that until I was about 30. But I was gay. I was the gay kid, and I was bullied for it. And I was called. It was a very, very painful experience going through high school in Gallup. The kids were not uniformly all cruel, but you know, there was definitely negative experiences. There were good people who treated me well, but there was a lot that didn't. I was really badly bullied, and you know, it was the classic. The teachers ignored it. The school ignored it. They had no interest in protecting the odd kid. And, you know, that really formed me as a person.
Yeah.
When I graduated from high school at 17, I was out of town so fast it made your head spin.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go back and work there now, and I have over the years, but I have very painful memories of that time period. So,
yeah.
And, you know, it's been, what? I graduated 43 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, but they don't go away.
Right. You know? And there are things that have been, you know, they've kind of formed you at the core. Even if you want to let it go, the way that people talk to you, the way that people treat you, and then to have to go back to that town, there's definitely things in our brain that happens, right?
Yeah. And I think people even have that experience when bad things happen in big cities. But smaller towns, it's more closed in. Mm-hmm. It's more there, I guess. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it's more. I think it's a more intense experience for people who go through some of that in smaller towns.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that old adage that everybody knows everybody knows your name kind mm-hmm. of thing, really has an impact on you.
Yeah.
And it was not a good experience. And I have never, I mean, I have lived in general vicinity of Gallup ever since I graduated in the general area,
mm-hmm.
but I've never wanted to go back and move there. And one of the things that I think is key is that I have never gone to a high school reunion. I have been invited. I've had many people. There are many people here in Farmington, some nice people that I went to school with down there that, you know, keep encouraging me to go. To those things, and I have never gotten to a high school reunion for very specific reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
So, whenever you say the odd kid, so we, do you mean because you were very tall and because you weren't athletic, you weren't, you know, particularly, you weren't in theater or band or anything like that, right?
No, there wasn't really a theater department back then. I mean, that might have been a good outlet for me, but,
yeah.
You know, I was not good at sports, mm-hmm. and yet I was very tall. I was the second tallest kid in my high school class, and I got a lot of razzing for that. But it was also because I was, you know, I was different. I was an effeminate kid. I wasn't a masculine kid. Mm-hmm. Again,
you had really nice hair.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I had hair back then, yes. And it was nice. And it was, you know, I was kind of maybe a hippie-ish type of kid, but I didn't. Being physically different and being what I now recognize as being gay, I stood out. Mm-hmm. I really stood out. And I recognized that. And there were people that were very kind to me.
Yeah.
I had a friend from that period that contacted me on Facebook recently. We both turned 60 like the same week. And we've been chatting every once in a while. There were some really good people from back then, but they don't stand out. It was the ugly experiences that stood out.
Yeah.
I was very, you know, I don't think people realize that when a kid is as badly bullied and mistreated as I felt like I was back then, I don't think people realize how long you hang on to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that particularly in a small town, it sticks with you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So after high school, you go to college and you,
yes,
you booked it out of Gallup. And where did you end
so
up?
So fast. I went to New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. I had a choice. I had to go in state because of tuition, and I had a choice between UNM and in Albuquerque and MSU in Las Cruces. Mm-hmm. I went to Las Cruces for two reasons. One, it was a smaller town, and I, you know, didn't feel like I could tackle a big city.
Yeah.
And two, it was farther away from Gallup for a couple of reasons. I wanted to get away from my mother, and I wanted to get away from Gallup, and the two things coincided. So Cruces was the best option for me. And I loved my time in Cruces.
Yeah.
I really came into my own.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah. So tell us a little bit just about your experience. Because, you know, New Mexico State, I don't think has ever been a very large school. It's much bigger now than it was when you were there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it is.
And, I mean, land size and student, you know, the yeah. How many students are there. And so what was your experience, just kind of some significant things about being at New Mexico State?
Really good friends. Was, you know, I had some ugly experiences there, too, because when you're the gay kid, it's odd.
In the 70s. We all have to remember, this is in the 70s.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was the late 70s. I graduated from high school in 75. So we're talking 75 to 80-ish, somewhere in there. Wonderful friends, wonderful school experiences. Some negative, but, you know, that's to be expected, I think. Mm-hmm. Everybody has some of those. But I had wonderful experiences. You know, to look back, to see how people are experiencing being gay now, and the pride celebrations on campuses and all those kinds of things. That didn't happen back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people didn't really talk about any of that. And yet there were gay kids.
Yeah.
And yet there were gay groups that I kind of gravitated towards a little bit.
Yeah.
But most of my friends were straight, and they were very accepting of me. And I had some really good experiences there.
You were in weddings.
Yeah.
So I think it's so special to hear that, you know, you went through growing up from kindergarten all the way through high school, not really having very close friends.
Right.
And part of that is because you moved around so much.
Partially, yeah.
And then now you're in college, which you get to decide who you're going to be when you go to college.
Right.
I think that's one of the reasons that I encourage kids to go and do something, even if, you know, they go to San Juan College or, you know, I always just say like, go and do something. Don't just sit and be stagnant, you know, because
yeah.
There's so much more life that you experience once you do something.
Yeah.
And you did that. And so now you get to be Donald, like true, authentic Donald in college-ish. Mm-hmm. Right? Because
yeah,
you weren't out
absolutely.
Yet. But you have good friends and you, I mean.
Well, and I think it's to use two friendships that I formed back then as an example. This last week was the 40th anniversary of a friend's wedding, and I was best man at that wedding. A few years later, I was best friend at another friend's wedding.
Best man, yeah.
Best man at mm-hmm. another friend's wedding. And those were really positive experiences. I'm still really close to the second friend. The first one, when I finally did come out as gay in my early 30s to him, I never heard from him again. We've reconnected in the last couple of years. I think mainly because I made the effort in a couple of ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously having a gay friend was not acceptable to him.
Yeah.
And that mainly had to do with his church, I'm sure, and mm-hmm. his religious beliefs. Those groups are the most negative. I don't even know how to describe that.
No, it's totally true. I've done a couple of other interviews with some young teenagers who have very specifically talked about their experiences as being queer in a church and what that's been like for them. And while some of it is positive, there's so much of it that's negative. And so I don't think that you're being unfair by saying that religious people are, you know, not kind usually to queer people.
They're the most likely to cause harm.
Yes.
They're the most likely to be damaging to a kid that's different, mm-hmm. whether it's a gay kid or a bisexual kid or a trans kid. They will use their religion mm-hmm. to hurt somebody faster than any group I know.
And then they'll back it up with, you know, just all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize. And I think harm is a really good word. I'm glad that you use that word because it's like harmful. And they have all of these other justifications and all of these other reasons that it shouldn't be harmful. We're trying to help you. And that's just not true.
It's not true. Well, and I want to separate the two things out. There's a spiritual belief, and whatever that individually is for somebody is one thing. What I'm talking about is actual organized religion. Mm-hmm. Organized religion will hurt somebody faster than a gay kid, faster than anything I know.
Yeah.
Because they've said, you know, organized religion tends to sit down and set up their own man-made rules, attribute it to God, and, you know, go out and hurt people with mm-hmm. it. And that's just what they do.
Yeah.
You know, that's very different from spirituality and believing in a higher being or whatever. Whatever works for that person. It's the organized religion that really is harmful, mm-hmm. I think, at least to gay kids, gay and trans kids.
And I'm just going to defend myself just a little bit here. This is the appropriate time to do that. You know, there's a lot of times where you and I have had conversations about, just in general, about faith and my faith, and then also... she's just going to stay. Ellie. So just so you know what's happening, Ellie, is walking around and really wanting Donald's attention. And Donald is not a pet person. He's allergic and he's like holding up his hands. And I keep trying so hard to get her from, you know, and now she's licking his feet and it's a mess. Sorry, Donald.
It's not a problem. Go ahead.
Oh, sweet Ellen. She has no idea. She thinks everybody's her friend.
Yeah, so, she does, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
She doesn't know. I like to be that person that doesn't, that tries not to do harm, you know, and part of it is because
that's very true.
My own sexuality, my own experiences in that, and then also just my faith in general. And so you and I have conversations a lot and you're always like, Brandy, you're very few people.
And that's true.
I feel like that's appropriate.
I try really hard to keep that in mind with everybody. Not everybody that calls themselves a Christian is a bad person.
But majority.
But a lot of them are.
In this climate right now.
I know some Christians who actually live up to the term Christian. And you're one of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't.
Right.
And that's just the reality of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, it's a high compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So tell us about your coming out story. Kind of what does that look like for you?
Well, like I said, I didn't do it till I was around 30. I had had relationships with women up to that point, really working hard at trying to be straight. Not even really realizing that's what I was doing. I was just like, this is what you're supposed to do. This is how it's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And then around 30, I just think something snapped and something changed. And I started looking at that as something that wasn't real for me and that I needed to do something else. And it was, you know, I just one individually with people as the necessity grew, I came out to them. The two bigger ones, the more pronounced coming out parts for me were, one morning, one of my coworkers that I worked as a social worker for 25 years at Child Protective Services, and a group of us had gone to a concert the weekend before. A group of coworkers and I had gone to a concert with our significant others, and my boyfriend Lauren at the time went with me. And, you know, I introduced him to everybody, and everybody was just so welcoming and accepting, and it was really positive. I don't even remember what the concert was anymore, but it was one of the country concerts in McGee Park. And then that next morning on Monday, our supervisor asked us what we did that weekend, and one of my coworkers just piped up and, you know, about we all went to this, and, you know, Don's boyfriend, Lauren, et cetera, et cetera. And I was suddenly out to the entire office, you know, totally on a very positive, just like, this is no big deal kind of thing. And the people that were listening to Darlene talk that morning were a little shocked, but they got over it fairly fast.
Yeah.
For the most part, there were supervisors that just went nuts, but.
Oh.
there were some people that went nuts, but for the most part, they were very welcoming and very positive. Mm-hmm. The other thing I did in that time frame was there was some articles in the Daily Times here in Farmington about gay issues for the first time, and I responded with some letters to the editor, and much to my mother's chagrin, came out to the entire world in the Farmington Daily Times.
Yeah.
So after that, I don't think I could have kept it a secret if I tried, so I never did.
That's awesome. So I'm listening to you, you know, talk about how you hung out with a couple of coworkers and then now all of a sudden you're out to everyone. I think that resonates with some other people.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And so I am not shocked to hear that people went, okay. And there were people that were a little bit kind of taken back just a little, but then, you know, there's such a different kind of feeling that happens when everybody knows, right?
Yeah.
And so,
oh, very much so.
And
very
so,
much so
after that experience for you, I just imagine, and maybe you can go into this a little bit more, of how now just your life in Farmington looks different after that, because it had to have.
It did. I mean, I was, you know, it was no longer a question mark for anybody. And there were people that, I mean, at the time they said, well, yeah, I suspected you were, blah, blah, blah. The thing every gay person runs into.
Yeah
I kind of knew that already when you come out. But so there was some of that. And there was some negative experiences. I mean, there were two women supervisors in my office that really did not want to acknowledge that I was a gay person, and did some pretty shitty things in that circumstance. But, you know, yeah. Compared to what I've seen other people go through, my experience was not bad at all.
Yeah.
And I've lived my life as an out gay man for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
For that reason.
And you say in the Daily Times article that there was a popular response, right? People really loved your response. And so how did people approach you after that?
Well, it was really interesting. There were messages sent to me through the paper because, of course, they don't give out my phone number or anything. And I got several different phone calls from people who just said, we admired what you did and I appreciate it. And my son is gay or I'm gay or whatever. And I had ended up having conversations with total strangers who were just so startled that somebody in Farmington actually was willing to come out in the paper and do something like that.
Yeah.
And I never got any negative calls. The paper didn't screen those out. They just screened to make sure I was willing to take a call, and didn't release my last name or my phone number or anything like that. But so I talked to everybody that tried to contact me, not knowing what to expect, and they were all overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
So which was a surprise.
Yeah. And I think that experience for you leads into, you know, you being a person who founded Identity Inc., right? You were one of the original people.
I was one of the original people. I wasn't there at the initial meetings to start it, but I came along a few months after that. But I helped open the first facility and then the second one. And just have been involved ever since. I'm on the board of directors now, and help do the finances for the center. And I really, you know, we're the only brick and mortar LGBT community center in New Mexico. Even Albuquerque doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. We are a red county in a blue state. We are an extremely conservative county. And yet the overwhelmingly positive response from our straight allies here has been a kind of amazing to
me.
Not kind of, it has been really very amazing to me, how much support we've gotten, because, you know, people will come forward and said, you know, I have a gay kid, or I have a gay brother, or I have whatever, and, you know, write us a check for $10 mm-hmm. to keep the doors open, those kinds of things. Really positive responses. Yeah, negatives as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we've had threats left on the door and those kinds of things. I remember the first gay pride we did 3 years ago, a guy, you know, we have open carry in this state, and, you know, a guy came in with a protest sign in front of the center at the gay pride parade with a gun on his hip, you know, those kinds of things. It's scary.
Even if he wasn't like waving that gun around, just flashing it in a situation where, you know the danger, and you know the what happens in other places, and mm-hmm. you can't help but think this could happen here.
Yeah.
And so there's fear.
Exactly. Well, keep in mind our first gay pride parade. It was the fifth pride. We've had five pride celebrations so far, but the first two didn't have a parade. So this will be our third one this year. And at the first one, it happened 2 weeks after the Orlando shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And even the police department was scared for us.
Yeah.
And they insisted on having extra protection. And they had snipers on top of the buildings and to protect us, because, you know, they didn't want the same thing happening in Farmington under their watch that happened in Orlando. And, you know, I really appreciate it. I have an enormous amount of respect for the police department here in Farmington and for Chief Hebby, because they don't care what our gender and sexuality is. They're here to protect us no matter what. And they showed it that pride parade, and have continued to show it in their own way ever since. That was a truly scary time. We had a candlelight vigil for the Orlando killings, and then went right into our pride parade, and we didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, which is, and that candlelight vigil was huge.
It was huge. It was something that was thrown together in less than 24 hours
mm-hmm.
at Orchard Park in downtown Farmington. It was a huge turnout. A lot of straight people, a lot of allies not wanting to be a part of the people that did it.
Right.
You know?
Just standing against that violence
in solidarity. Exactly.
Which is, it's awesome. So I think this is a really good moment for you. You know, we mentioned earlier that it's Pride Month.
Yes.
And so talk a little bit just about the history of Pride and why we celebrate.
Yes. Well, I keep hearing stuff lately about, well, why isn't there a straight Pride?
Oh, that happens every year.
Yeah. Well, there's no straight pride because you don't need one. Pride is not necessarily, didn't start out as a celebration. It started out as a kind of an affirmation of who we are. For those of you that don't know, in 1969, there was something called the Stonewall Riots in June in New York City. Stonewall is a bar in Greenwich Village. It still exists. It's now a national landmark that was made a landmark by President Obama. I haven't heard lately if Trump's tried to get rid of it or not, but you know, let's face it, he'll try. But the Stonewall riots basically were the first documented time that anybody could remember where gay people started fighting back. The police routinely walked into gay bars at that point and beat up gay people, and a lot of trans people and a lot of gay people fought back that night, and it turned into a 3-day riot. They held the police off for 3 days, fighting back just against the brutality that the general public and the police department in New York City at that time were inflicting on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so a year later, in 1970, in June of 1970, they held up the first Pride celebration. You know, hey, we're still here a year later. We're still standing. We're proud of who we are, and we're not going away. And from there, it just spread. And now there are pride celebrations in all 50 states, all the American territories, and quite a few foreign countries.
Yeah.
Do pride parades, whether it's a party, whether it's a parade, whether it's, you know, some other celebration. There are huge celebrations around the world just saying, hey, we're still here. You can still discriminate against us. You can still do all these things, but we're not going away.
Right.
I mean, that to me is the message of pride more than anything else. Yeah. It's just about we're here. We're here. We're queer. We're not going anywhere. You know, that
yeah.
kind of thing. So in 2 weeks from now is Farmington's third annual Gay Pride Parade, mm-hmm. downtown Main Street. On June 16th, Saturday, June 16th, it starts at 11 a.m. If you want to participate in the parade or just come watch it, please do so.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you.
Yeah. And if you need more information, you can contact Identity Inc. They're a supporter. They're not the entity that is putting on the parade or doing, you know, we just, Identity Inc. just supports the parade
yes.
and supports the people who are in charge of that. And so if you did need more information, I think that's a great start for you. And then they can connect you with those people.
Absolutely.
So if you are interested in being in the parade, that's your start.
Yes.
And yeah, Don, thank you so much for being on.
Welcome.
So this is all about your story. So I just want to make sure that there's not anything else that you want to share with people.
You know, I've shared a lot this morning.
You have. There's things that I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll think of it after we shut off the mic, but right now, no, I can't think of anything else.
Cool.
So
okay.
We could have a whole other half hour conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Whenever we were going through this and I was like, okay, Donald, like what story do you want to tell? And he was like, okay, here you go, Brandy. And he gave me all these talking points. And then he said, how long is this podcast? And I said, it's about 30 minutes. And he goes, 30 minutes? It's going to take me 2 hours to talk about all that. And I was like, we'll get through it.
we did the shortened version.
Yeah. So we're at about like, you know, 40 minutes or so right now. So we're golden. No, it's totally good. It's good. You know, this has been such a great story. And I think that your story, you know, you're 60 and it resonates with listeners. It resonates with other people in the LGBT community and not just and allies too, you know, hearing that you went through a lot when you were a young person, and people, the harm, the comment about harm, causing harm, is significant. And
yeah.
if people can start looking at it like that, and maybe even just hear their voices and hear sometimes the things that they say and their actions, it's not even sometimes their words, it's their actions. And
that's something to stress here. I mean, I think a lot of people live in their little old cocoons and their own little worlds. There is a huge gay community in San Juan County.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of straight people even realize that. There's a huge gay community that used to be very underground because nobody was allowed to talk about it and nobody was allowed to be open. I mean, I went out to dinner with a friend years ago at a restaurant here in town, and we got so harassed by other diners that we needed a police escort to get to our car. You know, there's those kinds of experiences, but there's a huge community here of people. Your next door neighbor could very well be a gay couple.
Right.
They're and of all ages. I see kids in high school here who are gay, all the way to my age and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I know gay people here in their 70s. It's an incredibly large community, a very diverse community, and you shouldn't ignore it.
And it's sometimes something that that people do hide. Because mm-hmm. of the harm that might come physically,
I think they still
emotionally.
Do. I think they still do. Even though it's 2018, even though we have the right to marry, all of those kinds of things, there's still a lot of hiding here.
Yeah.
There really is a lot of, you know, staying quiet because they just don't know how safe it really is.
Yeah.
And it's not always safe. I have to agree. It's not always safe. It doesn't always feel safe here.
Yeah. Well, Donald, thank you so, so much for being one of my guests. I think you just have a really great story. So I appreciate you. Yeah. And sorry about Ellie.
Hopefully, no problem.
Whenever you leave here, you're not, you know, coughing.
Well, I'm holding off the sneezing.
Ah, yes.
So we get off the air.
Cool. Okay. Well, then we'll close it out right there.
Okay.
This has been another episode of Small Town Expectations. If you would like to be a guest on the show, you can always email me me or look me up on any social media. My email is brandyrose9@yahoo.com or social media, Brandy Rose or Rad Brandy on everything. Look me up, follow me, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it so that other people can hear the incredible stories of everyone who has had a small town expectation. Until next time, have a great week, y'all.